Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Eastern Airlines Radio Talk Show. We broadcast each Friday at 6 p.m. East Coast time from Ponte Vedra, Jacksonville, Florida. Our website is www.ealradioshow.com, and our email address is host@ealradioshow.com. You may also tune us in at the website for a broadcast. And while you're at the website, we welcome you to join our radio club as a member by simply registering on the homepage and become a member. It's free, and you will be kept informed of our broadcast and our special guests. There are many interesting features on the website, such as the latest Easter news, calendar of events for the month, logbook of announcements, Eastern video clips, photo albums of members' submitted pictures, and, of course, the members' live chat room. You'll also want to see your friends and Eastern coworkers on the member page.
Neil, how does this chat feature work on the website?
It works fine, Bud, but not enough folks are using it yet. It might be because of where it's located on the website, which is at the bottom right corner of the page. If you go to the home site or any page on the website, you'll see on the bottom right corner a little small icon that tells whether friends are online or how many friends are online, if there are no friends online or if there are friends that are online. And just click that icon, and it should take you right into the chat room. Now, my name is Neil Holland, the host for your show this evening, and along with myself, we have Margaret Bars with us, and also Bud Hescock that will be on our show this evening. And we have a special in-the-studios guest. We'll be talking with her a little bit later. But let's return to our Eastern One crew and their friends, Captain Mick O'Malley and Flight Attendant Luann Wiggins, who have joined them on their layover at the LAX, where they are about to order dinner in the Irish pub.
Well, tell me, lads, do you want me to order for you? Or do you think you can handle it by yourselves?
Well, I've got mine already spotted. It's going to be the Irish stew, of course.
Captain, you...
But then again, I see corned beef and cabbage, which is my favorite, and boy, it sounds appetizing. It's an 8-ounce certified Angus beef, roasted in Guinness beer, and Tess's family blend of pickling spices, served with steamed cabbage, and all of that for $14.49. Bud, what are you ordering?
Well, I've been thinking about this all day. I've always had a craving for ground beef, carrots, onions, celery topped with mashed potatoes, and homemade gravy served with a side order of Irish soda bread. Boy, if that doesn't sound like shepherd's pie to me.
You know, sitting here next to Luann, looking at the menu, that beer-battered flaky fish and chips entree just jumps out at me. I think I'll try that. Don't reckon they have fried catfish and hush puppies, do they? Oh, Captain Mick, this is so confusing. Maybe you better order for me, because you know I don't speak a word of Irish.
Well, Luann, darling, I've been thinking about you all afternoon here. I've been, what would be appropriate for you? Then I started thinking, tender, slow-roasted tender beef, cooked with a blend of carrots, onions, and celery. And all I could think of, you and Dublin pot roast. Okay. Captain,
while we're there getting the order, I wanted to tell you about a couple write-ups we had in the maintenance log for the last aircraft we brought in from Atlanta. But I thought it was kind of funny. I think you'll get a laugh out of it. I know the captain, and he's always putting some crazy write-ups in this maintenance log.
Let's hear it, bud.
Well, I remember one time he put evidence of leak on the right main landing gear, and the corrective action was written by the mechanic saying, evidence removed. The other one was the aircraft handles funny, and I love this response. The corrective action was aircraft warned to straighten up and fly right and be serious. Now, I had some down right one in my craft, too, you know. He said, where the Irish have a great sense of humor. So they said to me, they said one write-up they had was something was loose in the cockpit. And the corrective action there was something tightened in the cockpit. Here's another one. I love this, too. It's test flight okay, except Autoland very rough. Autoland was not installed was the corrective action they wrote. And this one I just love this one. It's the best one. I saved it for last. The entry was noise coming from under instrument panel. Sounds like a leprechaun pounding on something with a hammer. The corrective action was took hammer away from leprechaun.
Well, I saw one written up by another flight attendant that a passenger lost a pair of sunglasses in the forward lavatory. Correction taken. Sunglasses now reside in the Houston sewer. Well, shoot, I don't know how many times I've had one of our captain crew tell me to write up that the captain lights are dim or the cabin lights are dim, and I tell them, duh, just adjust the dimmer knob, dummy. Shucks, on my first trip, my captain was Billy Bob Wilson, and he tried to tell me the best place for airline personnel to eat and get a good discount, where to shop for the best deals, and where to stay overnight. Well, next morning, I guess he noticed that I was missing when the crew got on the crew bus, but he knew which room I was in at the hotel, so he called to ask what happened to me. Well, I was crying and all upset, and I told him, I can't get out of this room. And Captain Billy said, what do you mean you can't get out of the room? Why not? And I said, well, there's only three doors in here. One is the bathroom, one's the closet, and the other one has a sign on it that says, do not disturb.
Well, with that, we'll leave the crew members to enjoy their evening at the Irish pub, with the hopes that their friendship will find them once again enjoying a layover at one of the many beautiful cities served by Eastern Airlines. Before we take our callers, Margaret, I wonder if you'll give our telephone number out to our listeners.
Sure, Neil, I'd be happy to do that. The area code is 213-816-1611. Let me repeat that. Area code 213-816-1611. Now remember, tonight it's our fourth caller who will receive our Eastern mystery gift at the sound of the bell. So when you call in and the bell sounds, you are the winner. So let's pick up those phones, give us a call, we're ready to talk.
Before we take any calls this evening, we do have a special guest with us in the studio. And I'd like to introduce Ronnie. Ronnie, your last name, if you can pronounce it, because I do a terrible name of pronouncing last names.
Okay, my name is Ronnie Gordils. I was known as Ronnie Hyde when I worked at Eastern Airlines.
Mm-hmm. And where did you work? When were your employment dates, and what bases did you work from?
I was based in Miami, Florida, and I started with Eastern Airlines in 1972 in the cargo accounting department. And I worked my way up to flight attendant scheduling, pilot scheduling, and then I ended up in the pilot training department. And I did leave before the demise of Eastern. I left in 1987.
Were you over at the Hartley building when you were working as a training scheduler?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
At the James Hartley building,
yes.
Best I recall. Okay, very good. And so you left at the in 1987 then.
Yes, I did.
A couple of years before Eastern went under. Okay, very good. And we hope that you'll stop by again, Ronnie. And we invite anyone that is in the Jacksonville area especially Friday afternoon at around 6 p.m. when we go live, please come by the studios, which is on the first floor level, adjacent to the parking lot. You're welcome to come in and sit with us when we do our live broadcast. You're welcome anytime. We do have a special guest, and we'll have our guest calling in just a little bit. But before that, we do have some email. And if we'll just go ahead and take a couple of the email mails that have come in since our last broadcast. I believe you have one, Margaret.
Yes, we do. We have one from Linda Reinhardt, and I'm going to spell her last name, E-F-R-U-S-Y. So, Linda, perhaps you can call in and tell us how to pronounce that. But anyway, Linda wrote this email, and she said, how about some of the funny stories, like when Pat Sylvius in Charlotte, and this was before security, was trying to help a guy catch his flight 5 minutes before departure. Now, next to the guy, she saw an extra bag and a two-year-old child standing next to him. So she grabbed the bag and put the screaming kid under her arm and ran to the gate. When they got there, she said, here's your bag, here's your kid. And he said, hey, lady, that's not my kid. Now, at that point, the mom caught up with him, and she said, I saw you running off with my kid, but I couldn't stop you, but I figured he'd be all right.
Yeah. You could pick him up in San Juan.
Exactly.
Do you have another one?
I've got one from Mike Marino, and he says, in all the years we've spent with Eastern Airlines, we all said that one time or another we could write a book about our experiences, and thanks for the head start. Thank you, Mike.
That reminds me, Bud, that we are putting together a collection of anything that our listening audience, our members of our radio club, want to share with us. And we hope to put it in a bound volume that will be available. And so if you will send your stories, funny, sad, whatever, if you'll just send them to us and make sure that you email them to host@ealradioshow.com, and we'll certainly put it in our bound issue. Do we have another emailer?
Barbara Morris asked, where do I find the past radio shows?
The past archive shows are located on the homepage on our website. At the very bottom of the homepage, you'll see a icon that represents the player. It is blue and white, and right beneath the Start button, which is the little arrow button, you'll see about four archived shows, beginning with the one that is the most recent played show the previous week, all the way to the first show that we started. So if you click that, that show that you want, in the future we will probably be labeling them episode 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and so forth. So if you just click on that episode, then it should play for you. And it'll be about 1 hour of playtime. Do we have another email?
We've got one here from Marilyn. Forgive me if I say it wrong. Is it Fegyo? It says, hi, I'm just new to the site and was just looking around to see what was going on here. I was a flight attendant from 1969 till the last day. She says I was based in Miami and Atlanta, but left the airline industry after the end, and now, unfortunately, I've been laid off for a year and a half. It seems like there's a lot to look at on the site, so I'll be checking in on Fridays. I'm still living here in Atlanta area and really only am in touch with two or three former employees, so this might be interesting to check out. I'm diving in now. Thanks so much, Marilyn. Well, Marilyn, if you're listening to the program, we'd like to give you a hearty welcome on board.
Yes, please come back and listen. And stay at the website. You'll find so much that you can view on the website. As a matter of fact, the videos are very popular on our site. We do have about 25-plus videos that are available for the members to watch, and there are a couple of real funny ones, but Most of them relate to Eastern Airlines commercials, and I think you'll find them very, very entertaining. We do have a caller on the line now, and so we'll take a call now. Caller? And this is 828. I believe we have Captain O.A. Fish on the line. O.A., can you hear me?
Hello?
Yes, hello. Yes.
Hello.
Yes, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can. My name is Jill Van Harlingen Cotton, and I was a flight attendant for Easter from 1968 through 87. And I had Captain Eddie on the airplane several times from Miami to New York.
Oh,
and
okay. Did you have a conversation with the captain?
Oh, yes. And the second time he got on the airplane, and I will never forget this, he bumped his head on the PSU, and he rubbed his head, and I was trying to help him, you know, get situated. And he said, well, that's one way to crack a coconut.
That's good.
So, you know, it was a delight to have him on board. And he would always try to get me to come down and sit down with him and chat with him during the flight.
And Jill, once again, what were your dates of at Eastern Airlines?
68 through 87.
Okay, you had a great career then. You flew most all of the aircraft then, didn't you? From the Martin.
I flew everything from the Electra to the DC-10, 747, 1011, which was my favorite, the A300, all of them.
Okay, very good. Well, we thank you very much for calling us this evening, and please do call again. Bud, did you have a comment?
I'm not too familiar with when the aircraft were there. Did they have the DC-8 when you were flying?
Oh, yes, the stretch and the regular model.
What'd you think of the 8?
I flew the 720 also.
Oh, gosh, yeah, that's great. What did you think of the DC-8? How was it to serve as a flight attendant on board that?
Oh, well, it was difficult. It wasn't an easy plane to work, either one, whether it was a stretch or the regular DC-8. When I started flying, of course, we had hired a lot of flight attendants at that point in time because it was closer to the end of the year. And I just seemed to get more of the shorter, more New York-Miami on the stretch DC-8 instead of the shorter one.
Well, it's very nice having you with us this evening, Jill. We have one caller. I think it's Captain Fish on board. And we'll take a call. I think you'll find this next caller very interesting. So thank you very much for calling us this evening, and have a good evening. And we'll talk to you again. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Captain Fish?
Hello, Dale. Greetings from the wet, cold North Carolina this evening.
Okay. We do have Captain O.A. Fish with us this evening. And as I've mentioned on the website, he has an interesting story to tell. And, O.A., I'd just like to have you to relate your experience on that morning of January 28th, I believe, 1986. Am I correct in the date?
That's exactly right. This past Friday marked the 25th anniversary. And
well,
I think
tell
just
us
about
your experience, O.A.
I think just about everybody that's old enough remembers where they were the day Challenger exploded.
Exactly.
And Barney Ross, my co-pilot, and I were flying the 757, the flight from Boston to Miami, and we had a front row seat. We were just south of Charleston, South Carolina, when the thing blew up. We were able to, of course, spot the cloud that was formed from the explosion, and later on went through the very airspace and was at the exact same altitude he was when it exploded. And one of the dilemmas that I faced on that particular flight, coming from Boston, you remember the school teacher, Krista McCullough, was from that area up there. And I had like 135 passengers on board, so I was a little bit reluctant to just pick up and make a cold announcement. You know, you never know who you've got on flight. You know, you could have somebody personally close to her or something. And I was basically praying and asking God to give me wisdom on what to do. Mary Piper, senior flight attendant, had come up in the cockpit, and I discussed it with her and Barney, and we decided probably it would be better to wait until we landed in Miami to make the call and not take a chance. But just a few minutes later, Mary came up and handed me a note from a medical doctor, and he was commending us for the flight and especially wanted to thank me for keeping them appraised, because we were delayed getting out of Boston there due to the Challenger being delayed launching that morning. And I'd kept them appraised of everything happening. So he was thanking me for keeping them updated on everything that happened. And here we were keeping back the biggest news of all. And so all of a sudden it dawned on me. I said, is he a medical doctor, Mary? And she said, yes, he is. And he's a general practitioner. And I said, do you know if we got a minister or maybe a priest on board? You know, the dominant religion there in the Boston area is Catholicism, Catholics. And she says, matter of fact, we do. We have a Catholic priest in the back. And so I asked her to get the doctor and the priest, tell them what had happened, and ask them if they would assist me if I made the announcement. And she came back, said they both moved to tears, said they'll do anything. Said, as a matter of fact, Father Gaudier, the priest, I said he would be glad to read from the 23rd Psalms and maybe have a prayer over the PA system if you would like. So I thought, this is a God idea, you know. And so that's what we did. And then, of course, as this happened, we were in the very exact spot where it exploded. So I was able to bank the airplane and show the people on the ground and so forth. And when we arrived in Miami, it was more like dismissing a church service than it was deplaning a flight. And so Father Gaudier and I stood there and greeted everybody as they left. And so it was a memorable day.
Yeah. OA, you have a beautiful picture that I have on my wall that was painted as a result of a story that was featured in the Reader's Digest. How did that come about, OA?
Well, it was amazing. After that flight that evening, I came on back to Atlanta and was coming home and felt led to go by TV, the Christian television station where I hosted some, you know, and share the story. And I did that night, and then word began to spread, and I have a friend that's a writer for Guidepost magazine. And so she said that Guidepost would really like to have the story. And so we wrote it up. Guidepost published it, and then I put a copy of it in Barney Ross's mailbox and ran into him a little bit later. And he said, that's great the way you kept it. And he said, I wouldn't be surprised if Reader's Digest don't pick up on this. And I saw Barney, Reader's Digest, I have lots of Challenger stories, you know. But got home, and sure enough, there's a telegram from Reader's Digest wanting the story. And so we shared it with them. They basically reprinted it from Guidepost. But they had a illustrator by the name of John Solly that did this beautiful painting that you're talking about there for the Reader's Digest article. And, of course, I was sent a copy of it. And a copy of it also hangs in the art museum at Cape Canaveral, I understand. And John Solly is now a artist for NASA as a result of that painting. Neil, if the people would like, they could go to our website, which is just southmountainchristiancamp.org, all small letters, /challenger, and there's a copy of this story as it's written in the book that I wrote, Fingerprints of God. There's also a copy of that picture there. And if anybody would like to have copies of the book or the picture, we could make it available to them.
Good. Captain Bud Hiscock, I have a couple questions for you. Were there other aircraft in the area that were viewing the same thing that you were, and was there any communications between the aircraft?
I don't recall any communications between the aircraft. One of the outstanding things I do remember when we reached the exact spot, and we could tell by looking down on the water beneath, you know, all the debris and stuff going on beneath us, we ran into some clear air turbulence, which was not available any other place. And so we reported that. And, of course, you may remember that has been declared the contributing cause for the accident with that layer of clear turbulence. But I don't recall any other communication, but I'm sure there were other flights in the area.
Okay. Another question I have is, when you landed in Miami, were there any comments from the passengers about
that? Oh, yes. The priest, I had the priest to come up front there, you know, before we opened up the door so he and I could be there, you know, for the passengers. And we had a lot of kudos. Matter of fact, when we made the announcement, Mary came up to the cockpit, and she said, "All I'm doing is handing out Kleenex, that there's not a dry eye on this airplane," and which there weren't. And it was just really amazing. Of course, we were running, you know, close to 2 hours late by the time we got there, and usually people are knocking each other out of the way, you know, trying to make those connecting flights and all. But it was just a very serene moment and a very reverent moment, I would say. So.
Mm-hmm. I guess so, yeah. Another few questions that I have for you. You talk about the South Mountain Christian Camp. When was that founded?
My wife and I founded it in 1974, and we're still going today. This is our 37th year. And, of course, I commuted to Atlanta from 72 when we moved here until I retired from Eastern in 89. So.
Now, they can go to your website. Would you repeat that website once again?
It's www.SouthMountainChristianCamp, just all small letters, .org. And then if you want to see the picture and the story, just do a slash and write Challenger. SouthMountainChristianCamp.org/Challenger.
OA, is there a way that someone can order one of these pictures? They're beautiful. They really are. The color is great. And I just wondered, I feel proud of mine. I got it framed. And is there any way that someone can order one of these?
They sure could. They can. And of course, you know, we give them away, but donations is what makes it possible. So we appreciate any donations that we might get. If they want to use the snail mail, they can just write us Post Office Box 9, Bostic, North Carolina. That's Bostic, North Carolina, 28018. And, of course, our email is smcc@blueridge.net. And maybe you could put that on your blog so somebody can pick it up later.
I sure will. And if I could get a copy of a picture of your the one that you've got on the website, I'd be happy to post that as well, along with your website. It is. I went to your website, and it's very interesting about the number of years that you have had videos. As a matter of fact, you've got videos posted on the website of the children and all of the activities that you have there at the campsite. And also, OA, I Googled Earth Dip, and I saw the facility from above, and you've got a beautiful spread there.
Right. We've got about 260 acres. Of course, our niche is reaching out to underprivileged children, and we do 6 weeks in the summertime. We bring in 100 kids a week for 6 weeks, and about 80% of these kids are kids that need financial aid in order to come. And so that's the way we've been since the very beginning. Of course, in the beginning, we slept in tents and couldn't quite accommodate that many. But we've had thousands of kids to come through here during the 37 years or 36 years we've been operating. So
I have a question for you. As beautiful as
sure.
the painting is, do you have any other publications that they can receive?
Well, we just got the book, The Fingerprints of God, right now, and I've been trying to work on another book, but it's been slow. So I've been getting a lot of requests, and of course, for those that have read The Fingerprints of God, it's a collection of stories, you know, little miracles, I call them, you know, of you know how God has made all this possible for us. And of course, we have enough stores to fill a library now.
Oh yeah,
but we could get them together. But I tell you, it's been very fulfilling for me. I'm probably just about the happiest guy you've ever met.
You've always been that way, OA.
I'm 77 and still going pretty strong. Not as strong as I once was, but
when Eastern went down, were you still on the 75, or had you checked out in the 1011 or any other airplanes beside that airplane?
No, I was still on the 75, and it just so happened that I got grounded just before the strike started there with a heart problem, and I lost my medical.
Oh.
So then I just put in for early retirement. When I saw what was happening, I just went ahead and put in for early retirement, which was effective in 89 there. So,
yeah.
And I was writing the book Fingerprints of God at that time, plus a lot of other things. And so I decided that I wanted to concentrate on what I had before me here. So,
yeah.
We made Eastern sort of history, but it's a great history. I still really enjoy the fellowship that I have. And I want to mention, too, that we have quite a few of our Eastern families that are regular supporters of the camp. And that's a real blessing to me to have that encouragement over all these years. You know, they've been standing with us, and we just really appreciate that.
Well, O.A., just where is Bostic, North Carolina?
Well, it's located about halfway between Charlotte and Asheville. We're sort of in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains. There's a little range of mountains that lies on a Interstate 40 goes from, say, Winston-Salem to Asheville. And if you're going west, there's a little range of mountains just south of Interstate 40 called the South Mountain Range. And we're located on the west end of that mountain range. Our property goes up to the top of that mountain range. So.
Do you take visitors stopping by? And
Sure. Yeah, we have a little old cabin we call our Glory Land cabin. It's got a sleeping loft and a cathedral ceiling area with a fireplace and kitchenette and all this. It's a neat little cabin, and we let visitors stay there when it's available. And of course, anytime during the day, we welcome visitors. So we've had a lot of our Eastern families come by. So
very, very good. That's great. I'd just like to drive up. My little brother's got a cabin up in Blue Ridge, Georgia, and I don't know how far that would be from Bostic.
We're 3.5-hour drive from Atlanta, so if that gives you some idea.
Oh yeah.
The nearest town of any size is called Forest City. It's Bostic is just a little railroad town of 400 and something people, and basically that's our mailing address. We're of course out in the country with the camp. So.
O.A., we certainly thank you very much for calling in this evening and telling us about that experience that you had on that tragic day. But we hope that I wish we could take callers to ask you calls directly, but with this radio setup that we have, we just can't take callers to share callers with you.
Well, I'm sure that'll be a future advancement you'll
that's
have.
That's going to be that's exactly right.
Well, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity, and also I just enjoy the program. I went back and listened to your archive programs, and so I just wish you the best as this thing goes on. I believe it'll catch on.
Well, I tell you what, O.A., we've got one caller on the line, and my producer says, let's try to see if we can get this caller to share a question. Perhaps he's got a question for you, but let's see if we can stay on the line just a minute. And see if he can talk with us. Caller, can you talk?
Yeah. Hi, Neil Al. Captain Al, how the hell are you?
Hello, Captain Al. I don't know whether you know this one or not, but this is Al Brelaud. And Al, do you have a question for O.A., or you just want to share some?
I didn't catch what O.A. was talking about before. What was the circumstance that he was talking about?
Well, he was sharing his experience with the Challenger and the explosion back in 1986 when he was in the air.
I The only opportunity I had one time is we were coming down 1150 and they turned us in westbound just before the Cape, and they had a shot go off, and we did the turn, and I swear that rocket, it was probably one of the smaller rockets that they were sending up. It looked as if that thing was going to come right through our window. That's the only time I had. And the other one I had, we down here used to go out Saturday mornings for breakfast, and we were over here in, I think it was Lake City, and we were over there, and when we got on the ground, we heard about the other one, the shuttle on the way on the return, when they lost that on the way in. That was the only other time I had, but I don't recall where I was at the time when the Challenger went, but I was still working for Eastern at that time.
Yeah. Well, there are some events that we all remember where we were, what we were doing when John F. Kennedy was killed, and, of course, the Challenger and the 9/11. We all remember that, and also the Challenger. So those are things that are indelible. Written in our minds.
That's in your mind.
They're etched in your brain. Well, as you know, I lost my son-in-law there at 9/11, his whole squad, and they've never found him. But that was one tragedy that I don't know. I think we lost the war with them when they did that, because they somehow got to go out, and I don't know how they're ever going to retaliate, but we don't retaliate. But the trouble is, a lot of the youngest people in this country, they forget about what Pearl Harbor was and things like that. So
yeah. Now your son-in-law was a fireman, wasn't he? And he was in the building.
Right. He was a lieutenant in New York City Fire, and he was in Squad 41, and they lost his whole squad down there. And the only thing that they recovered, like every fireman has a tool that they carry with them, like to jar windows open and doors and things like that. And the only thing they found is the tool that Michael had. And my daughter has that tool home. And it really affected my grandchildren because of that. They really took it hard. So,
oh, sure.
But as they say, time heals all things.
Yeah.
But my youngest grandson right now, he's going to college, and he's specifically trying to go get onto the New York City Fire Department. So in memory of his father.
Mm-hmm.
Reepa contributed to some of the funds for the 9/11 tragedy.
That's true. Yeah. I don't know whether you know about our scholarship foundation, but we do have a scholarship foundation.
Yeah.
And Albury Laud is one of the board of directors, one of the members of the board. We have a donation that can be made on the website. I haven't set it up completely yet, that you can make donations to that website for the scholarship of in the name of Eastern Airlines for those aviation students that are in their junior year.
That's at Auburn, I believe it is.
Yeah, it's at Auburn University. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that's a great thing.
Neil, remember to tell them, too, that's fully tax deductible, too. And even though Auburn picks the scholarship, if we have an Eastern employee's family join, they still get a little bit of preference to picking up some of the scholarships.
Right.
But,
well, listen, I want to thank both of you this evening. I've got one caller that's still holding, and you guys continue to listen in, and thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you, Dale. Talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm hanging on, Neil. Go ahead.
Okay. We have another caller on the line. Caller, can you hear me?
Good evening, Neil. Tim Nunn. How are you?
Hey, Tim. Oh, it's our commercial time. we have Tim Nunn, who, as most of you know, is our sponsor. And is he our fourth caller?
Yeah.
Okay. But Tim is our sponsor with a mortgage company. And, Tim, what kind of special mortgages are available out there for our listeners?
Well, we've got some new products that have come in, and we're able to go down to like a lower credit score than the banks. We can go down to 580 right now and help people in various states, Georgia, Florida. And, of course, we still have the reverse mortgage. Someone wants to cash out and needs just some money. And that one, they don't even have to pay back. And then we have FHA, VA. So if you're a vet and you'd like to do a streamlined mortgage, so we have a number of products that would help people if they, then the rates are still good. That's the big thing.
Tim, have you heard of this USDA type of mortgage? And just what is a USDA mortgage loan?
Oh, those are, yes, the USDA Department of Agriculture has loans in rural areas. Those loans actually go up to 100%. So if the consumer make, you know, $50,000 and you put it into a website and get approved for USDA, we do those USDA loans. They actually can go up to 102% to outpay some of the closing costs if the appraisal's more than the cost of purchase. So we do have those too.
So it's 100% financing. Is there any mortgage insurance related to that type of mortgage?
Well, yes, sir. It is still a HUD, FHA-type product, so there is mortgage insurance on there. So, yes, sir.
I understand there's a funding fee. It's kind of like the VA. They charge you a one-time fee, and it's financed into the loan.
Yes, sir, but they've lowered it. It was up at 2.25%, and now they've lowered it down to like 1%. So that's really
okay.
Helped the consumer buy. And then the USDA, that's rolled into the loan for them.
Correct. So that's right. Well, thanks. Tim, how can someone get in touch with your company?
Well, I think the best way is go to your website. Now, I think you've listed us there, and that would be the easiest way because people remember you. And
Well,
so,
go to the website
great.
And go under sponsors, and you'll find South Atlantic Mortgage, I believe is what we have.
Yes, sir. And before I leave, let's talk about airplanes for a second instead of loans. Our buddy Tim Hester called me Sunday night, this previous Sunday night, and went for an airplane ride. He's got a gentleman that bought a brand-new 182. The airplanes now are expensive. It's about $400,000 for this toy.
Wow.
And it's brand new. Well, it's actually a 2009. He's had it for a year and a half or two. And he doesn't fly the airplane very much, so it has to go. Someone has to go exercise it. So I got the privilege of going. It's got the new glass cockpit, and it's like playing a computer to land the airplane. It even shows it has what they call a synthetic vision. And so as you approach the landing, you actually can see on the TV screen the stripes going underneath you all the
My
way to the ground.
My golly.
So you could take a 182, fly it theoretically in 0-0 weather all the way to the ground.
And it's a coupled approach all the way down?
It goes all the way down. Now, I don't think you'd want to do that because in reality, it is synthetic vision, so that means it's showing you what is there, but it doesn't know if there was a dog or a cat or a deer going across the runway. It wouldn't know that.
Yeah.
So you really you'd want to break out at least 350 feet and see what you really get into.
Right.
But what a trip, man. It's smooth, and these new interiors are incredible, and what a ride to get to go fly such an expensive airplane.
Well, that's good. I think I'm going to take a trip to Atlanta and get my good friend Tim Hester, who, by the way, is a Delta Airlines captain and a good friend of both you and myself. I've had the pleasure of flying the simulator with him. I think I told on our first broadcast my experience of going into the Delta simulators and I put my Eastern Airlines captain hat on in a Delta airline plane, and but we had a great time that day. And but tell Tim hello for me.
I'd be glad to. I'll see him next week. He's over in Zurich, I think, right now, flying back. So he'll be back tomorrow, I guess.
Okay. Thanks so much for calling in, Tim. I appreciate it.
All right. Y'all have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's all I have to do is next to see a 182 with auto land.
Yeah. I think it takes three autopilots to do a Cat 3. Al, are you still on? I think you're off. Okay. He's there? Al?
Yeah, I'm still here. It took two autopilots with a Cat 3, right?
It takes three autopilots, and if one malfunctions, I think you can continue on at some point. A lot of this is leaving my memory now. It's been so long ago, Al, but I remember doing
it. Neil, our memory is gone. We got more time retired than we had flying with the company.
I know it. I know it. How's Mary getting along?
She's doing good. She's inside relaxing, so, and I'm sitting here watching the news. I see where Kelly is going to go on the shuttle flight. He's going to command the Challenger on the last flight. Not the Challenger, the Endeavor on the
Endeavor,
last flight.
Yeah, I saw that on the...
All right. So okay. There was one thing I wanted to bring up that we had. Remember last week we talked about the Arthur Godfrey disc that's out there, and where he had Dick Merrill flying as co-pilot when Godfrey was flying as captain on the 1049.
Right.
You there?
Yes,
yeah,
I am.
And then the biggest charge I got out of that, it was Arthur Godfrey says feather number one, feather number two, feather number three. And I say, when you feather number three, you got your hands full because you'll never hold that airplane.
Yeah, that's good. The best thing I remember about is when he says, now it's time for a Chesterfield.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, light up, because you're going to have to light up something to keep your hands full on that thing. That Connie had a head of its own when we flew it, although it was a beautiful piece of equipment at that time.
Yeah.
So, all right, Neil, I'm going to sign off, and maybe I'll be on with you next week, huh?
Okay, thanks so much for calling in. I appreciate it.
Say hello to Peggy, huh?
Okay, good night.
In all the time I've had, I only made one auto land.
One auto land?
Yeah, I'd say I had to put a lot of faith in that equipment, but it worked.
Yeah.
It really worked great.
I shouldn't say this. I shouldn't tell this story, but I will anyhow. I don't have a license that the FAA can take away from me now, so I can share this. But on one of my last flights, I was flying captain on the 1011, and we were going into L.A., and the sea fog off the Pacific, it rolled in. Of course, you know, every evening it rolls in.
It sure does.
And they were reporting 00, and the RVR, I think, was around 200 feet, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, it meant that we made a Category 3B landing. And the A300 did a good job on the Cat 3 approaches and the landing. And so my wife was with me on that flight, and so I told the senior flight attendant to go back to the first class, where she had a seat in the first class, and to get her and bring her up to the cockpit. And I wanted her to see what I did for a living. And so anyhow, she went back, and she came back, and she says, Captain, she's not coming up to the cockpit. I asked her, I told her that you wanted her to come up, and told her what you told me to tell her. And I said, well, you go back and tell her that if she doesn't come, I will go physically and bring her to the cockpit. So don't make a scene. So needless to say, she came up and she sat in the jump seat behind me. And, of course, we locked onto the autopilot, and we I think it was a downy approach to one of the parallel runways, of course, the Category 3B. And we always landed on the North Complex at LAX.
Okay.
And anyhow, we went into the clouds, and the airplane was doing a beautiful job. And, of course, I just had my hand lightly on the control column in the event we had to go around a malfunction. And the old L-1011 did a beautiful job that night, because the first thing she saw and the first thing that I saw when the engineer said 25, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you know what they say when they're reading the radio altimeter.
Right.
And the first thing you see is a light.
Yeah.
And then you see another light. And then you see another light and another light and so forth. So that's all she saw. And of course, we were able to get to the gate that evening. And so that's what she experienced in the cockpit with me. And I'm glad that she did have the chance to see that Category 3B.
Yeah, that's quite the experience.
And it was quite an experience. And the 757 had a beautiful auto-land system.
Oh, it did. It had a great auto-land system.
Do we have any more emails at this time?
Well, actually, Neil, we have one, and it's regarding the Challenger flight from Jan Belland, I believe is the correct pronunciation. And she says, I may have been on his flight. Again, she's referencing Captain Fish. We were in the air going into Miami, and the captain was able to stay near the Cape and announced that the shuttle would be taking off and we'd be able to see it. After the explosion, there was stunned silence in the airplane. No one said a word. We didn't want to believe what we had seen. Not until every passenger deplaned and the crew was leaving the airplane did I say to the captain, that was nice that we were able to see the shuttle. And that's when he confirmed to me, it exploded, you know. I wonder if that was Captain Fish.
You know,
listening on the fourth.
You know, it may have been Captain Fish's flight because he was going to Miami, I believe he said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was Boston to Miami on that flight. So it could have been the very same flight that OA was a captain on. We want to read some announcements at the end of our show this evening and about our calendar that we have on our website. And the website has a calendar page that you can go to and see the activities that are happening during the month. And this month of February, we want to go ahead and before we get to that, we have one caller on the line, and let's go ahead and take this caller. Caller, go ahead if you're there. Hello?
Captain Hill?
Yes.
How are you?
Yay. Yay.
Good old number four.
Guess what? You have won the mystery prize.
I can't believe it.
Who
never called the show. This is Grace.
And who's calling?
My name is Patricia. I was a former flight attendant based in Boston.
All right.
Eastern.
Patricia, is your last name so we can send you this this mystery gift?
Oh, it's Fitch, F-I-T-C-H.
And Patricia, if you will email us your address and email it to host@ealradioshow.com, and we'll be able to send this out to you Monday.
Well, great.
Now, tell us about your experience as a flight attendant.
Well, you know what? I wanted to run a few things by you. I did try to email you an idea or two for your skit that you were doing at the beginning of the show.
Wonderful.
The email bounced back to me, so I don't know if I, you know, what it was, but we'll try it again. But my ideas were, you know, a lot of the tremendously favorable moments were actually boarding our passengers. And the flight attendants and the pilots would all be, you know, at the front and just generally happy to see the people getting on. And, you know, you had your unaccompanied minor stories and getting to tour the cockpit and getting their wings. And so a lot of real pleasurable stories could be done as a skit with that.
Yes. No, as a matter of fact, I've got one I was going to tell if I had a little time, but we're running out of time. But I think that would be a good source for a skit. And there were so many things that were happening right at the boarding gate.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, Patricia, another one, I don't know if you ever flew the shuttle, but how many stories do we have that are out there that we can tell about the Eastern shuttle?
Yeah, the shuttle was a great product. Yeah, big stories on the shuttle.
That's good.
Hey, Neil?
Yes?
I was wondering, you know, I keep hearing this about the second coming of Eastern Airlines, and I am tremendously interested in it. I'm thinking that all of this with the talk show and all of these things are just precursors to that. Am I right?
Well, we hear stories about, well, we hear talk about stories, but talk or rumors or whatever that the new owners of Eastern have intended to get the airline back up in the air. And they are still, from what I understand, talking with a couple of the guys that are in the, I guess, in the loop there. They have indicated that they're still planning on that. And hopefully it will come to fruition that once again, Eastern Airlines will be in the air again. Patricia, we have just a few minutes left, and we'll certainly, during our shows in the future, we will see if we can get one of the owners of the Eastern entity to come on and talk to us about what the plans will be. I hope we can do that.
All right. And Captain Neil, I'd like to volunteer if there's anything that I can, you know, do for the show or anything like that. This is a lovely thing to be doing.
Well, thank you so much. And when you email me, I'm going to email you several things that you can do. Okay.
Okay, and also, I wouldn't mind if somebody wanted to get me a job right now with an airline.
Okay, all right, maybe we'll
let me see. Luann?
Who is that? Who is that with you?
Well,
who is
listen,
that? What did the other person say there?
He said,
I was saying, I was going to, well, Luann was talking about how great Air Kentucky was. I yelled for Luann to help me out of this situation.
That's pronounced
Air Kentucky. Air Kentucky.
Well, we're going to have to sign off in just a couple of minutes, so I thank you very much again for calling. Please call us again next week, if you can.
Thank you. I'm so glad you're on the air, and I'm thrilled to be able to get through. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Do we have time to just give a real couple of quick luncheons?
Yeah, oh, yeah, I think we do.
Go ahead.
Yeah, actually, there's lots of events this month in the way of the Eastern get-together luncheons. So if you're in the Lake City, Florida area this Monday around 11:30, do stop in and have lunch with the Lake City Lunch Bunch. And that is correct. It's called the Lake City Lunch Bunch. And a map to their location is on our website's calendar page. Just click the Lake City posting, and directions and map will appear.
The retired Eastern Airlines Pilot Association, REAPER, will have their lunch on the 8th. If you're in the Atlanta area starting around 11 a.m., they do have a featured speaker at the luncheon. Again, they go to the website's calendar page, click the event, get directions and the map for the event.
And if you're in the Florida Panhandle area, Pensacola, on the 8th of February, the REAPER group has its luncheon at the McGuire's Irish Pub, starting at 11 a.m. See the calendar and directions and the map.
And the Palm Beach chapter of EARA holds its luncheon on the 17th of this month. See the calendar for the time, the directions, and the map for this event. They usually have a featured speaker. And actually, Palm Beach sounds really good to me. Again, my name is Luann.
Well,
I'm going to post.
Time, Luann,
I will
here.
Post a profile if anyone's interested, and I'll have all that info on the website. Thank you.
Again, at Gainesville, Lake City area. If you attempt the REAPER lunch on the 28th of the month and REAPER groups get together, see the calendar for time and directions on the map.
Any Eastern group wanting to get your information on our website's calendar page, please email us your information of date, time, and location, and we'll make sure that it's shown on our monthly calendar of events. Now, until next Friday at 6 p.m., we all say
good night.
Good night.